On this episode, we talk to first-time author, Lifetime Jesuits, Joe Hoover, a religious brother in the Society of Jesus, whose ministry is in the arts. We have a profound conversation on, if God is so loving, why do we suffer? As well as, should the Christians and Catholics step up their role when it comes to human rights? This and plenty, plenty more, guys. With his new book titled, O Death, Where's Thy Sting? A Meditation on Suffering. If that's not an opening for an episode, I don't know what is. Okay, awesome. So, tell us about this. What made you want to write this book? Is this your first book?
Yes. I was asked to write it, and I had a bunch of essays already written about various parts of Jesuit life, Jesuits being a Catholic religious order, going to different parts of the world, working, you know, studying, doing social justice activism, working in, you know, poor communities, you know, just all that stuff. So I've been a writer for a long time, and I work in a magazine, and I, you know, had some stuff published. So yeah, I was just asked to do it. And so I put a bunch of stories together, and then I added a lot of new material also. So yeah, that's how it kind of came about.
For our viewers, can you please tell us the title of your book?
Yeah, it's called O Death, Where Is Thy Sting? A Meditation on Suffering from Orbit Books. It comes out in mid-December.
Gotcha.
And the title, where'd that come from?
It's from Paul, letter to the, I believe it's the Colossians, basically saying, you know, death, it used to be in the Jewish philosophy and theology that death was the price of sin. And so now he's saying that Christ overcame death because he resurrected. So now death has no sting anymore. So it's almost like a taunt.
Gotcha.
Oh, death, where is thy sting? And so it uses that, the book, as towards the end, is sort of a way to look at this issue of death and suffering and where is God and that stuff.
And who is this book for?
You know, that's a great question. In some ways, I was asked to write it, and it's, you know, for a Catholic audience. I mean, it's really for anybody, but it's, this book publisher is a Catholic book publisher. And so it might be targeted towards like Jesuit and Catholic high schools and colleges, but ideally it'd be for anyone who's wrestled with the question of how is it that terrible things happen under the beneficence of a loving God, you know? Why is it we suffer when the theology and the belief is that God loves us? So for, in some ways, it's just for me to help me think about these things. Like, I'm trying to figure this out myself, and that's a way for me to kind of understand better what I believe.
So it's almost like you putting your thoughts on paper, kind of like, in a sense, therapeutic, but in a sense, you're getting some type of epiphany or self-realization.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, it is. I mean, therapeutic is kind of the right word in a way, or just, I got a chance to hear Arthur Miller speak once, and he's not long before he died. And he said, the writing is the act of figuring out what you really think. And so it's a chance for me to kind of dive deep and explore this and this and this, and then understand, okay, what do I know? And what are the things I cannot know about human suffering and God, because ultimately God is beyond knowing. So, so it was fun for me to kind of dive deeper and deeper and deeper in that topic.
You say they asked you to write this book. Who is they?
They is the publishers of Orbis, an editor for Orbis Books, which is out of the Mary Knoll religious order, and they're upstate. They're actually in Ossining, New York. There's something.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think this book, did you start writing it during the COVID pandemic?
I did not. I had, in fact, it was supposed to be done by February of this year. So it was great. It was pretty much done. And so it looks at everything from, 9/11, incarceration of Black juveniles in Minneapolis, poverty in El Salvador, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time it was going into final edits, COVID was rampaging across the country. And we thought about, do you want to add something about COVID? And I thought about adding a few lines or something in the beginning. And then in the end, I don't have anything about COVID because we just decided, or I decided, people have had enough. I mean, we've talked about it a lot.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
And do we need to explore it? And a book about suffering, people will make their own analogies, even if it's not about the disease.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to bring into it, you know.
No, I think, I don't know about you, but I think the timing of it is couldn't be more perfect because of this pandemic and people losing not only their lives, but they're losing their livelihoods, their jobs, their routines, relationships, all that's been jeopardized with this.
Some folks say their freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, their freedom.
Oh, yeah. Right, right. That's insane, but right.
I know.
I mean, what are you going to pay, your freedom or your life? I mean,
yeah,
exactly.
Or someone else's life, my grandmother's, my mom's life for your freedom.
Exactly.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Ridiculous. But it's just a general book, but I think it's the question of questions for theology and for Christians or anybody who has some kind of belief in God or doesn't believe in God or looks at the insanity of the world and asks, why does he, why did this guy get COVID and I didn't? Or why, did this kid die in childbirth? And I would, so all those insane questions that are just impossible to answer sometimes.
Do you look at yourself and your own life and sort of feed off that as well in your book?
Yeah, it's uses my encounters with other people, but it's not so much about how have I suffered and how have, I had some terrible thing happen or I had some, crash in my life or whatever. It's really just trying to, it's not about me. It's me looking at these things, looking at 9/11, looking at this woman, Mary Sunshine, who lives in poverty in New Mexico, looking at the horrific things that happened to people in El Salvador and asking questions about that, but not about my own life. I didn't want it to be about me necessarily.
And we only got to preview the first three chapters, but I like the opening as far as you questioning the unfair treatment as far as why do some kids basically are born with a silver spoon in their mouth and the others are just born with no opportunity and basically born with a handicap because of the situation, whether they're born in poverty, whether they're born a certain skin color, especially with Raymond and myself having a lot of disadvantages, but not choosing it. And I like what I got to preview the first couple of chapters, you mentioned that, especially in chapter one, it was very insightful to probably see where the tone of your book was going.
Yeah. No, thanks for saying that. I mean, it's trying not to let anyone off the hook or find an easy answer because, not to give it away in the end, there's really no good answer. I mean, there's no neatly twined up thing. I still do not have an answer for why that happens, but the only thing I can do is my response, do we just ignore people, kids languishing in jail, or we say, whoa, what's going on here? Why do Christians who profess to be so good allow this stuff to happen? Because this is calling at least me out on my own Christian Catholic life. And the majority of people in this country, 70% are religious Christians of some kind.
Yeah.
So, and yet, scores and scores of kids languish in jail for, and is a 12-year-old responsible for his own life that he,
Yeah.
So it calls, for me anyway, it calls us out.
Do you feel that the Christians are under attack right now?
No.
Well, not in America, right? Anyway.
I mean, that's a big question. Like, tell me more. What do you mean by that?
Do you feel like your views or beliefs as a Christian, do you feel like they're treated as if they don't matter or not important?
Yeah. In my own life, with my encounters with people, I haven't experienced that so much. I think for me, let me just speak for myself in a personal way. I think if I approach people in an authentic way and just be myself and engage people with the truth of their life, don't hide behind any religious mask, but don't be ashamed of it either. People will respect you, you know. It really doesn't matter if you're Christian, atheist, Hindu, Buddhist, whatever. Like, people are looking for authentic relationships and authentic people, and so they're more likely to listen to whatever Christian stuff I have or whatever's behind that if you just meet them straight up as just a human, you know. So on a personal level, no, I don't feel attacked or under attack. I think Christianity should be under attack, though, by people who point out, and rightly so, that we're not living the gospels in sometimes in real ways that, you know.
Absolutely.
Let me put it like this. Mm-hmm. I did some marches and protests in the streets for the Black Lives Matter movement.
Okay.
This is not led by the Catholic Church or the Christian churches. This is groundswell, right? This is, you know, it's always the young and you know, students and so forth, and activists. Christians come along in the wake of this, right? In my neighborhood, there's a mutual aid society, which is basically neighbors helping neighbors, you know, shopping for each other, doing rent eviction actions, trying to fight people who are literally standing in front of their homes as they're trying to get evicted, as they're about to get evicted. You know, real basic justice issues, which is, for me anyway, the corporal works of mercy. When were you hungry and we fed you? When did you need shelter and we sheltered you? But this is not a church doing this. And most of these guys, 20s and 30s, they're not necessarily religious.
Yeah.
But they're showing up, we Christians, you know, so we should be called out.
Yeah. No, I definitely, I agree. Like, Christianity has turned into, to me, a fad. It's like orange. It's the new black. It's, oh, I'm a Christian, but, oh no, I don't go to church, but I'm a Christian, but I gossip. I'm a Christian and I judge, and I'm a Christian and I don't help my neighbor, but I will sit there and gossip over my neighbor. I've noticed a lot of that, and I've noticed cliques. I mean, Ray and I have talked about it before, but he's heard me talk about it, and he's asked me if there's, do I have church hurt? Because I do make comments. And it's only because, you know, the non-denominational churches, I think it's so cliquey. If I can put it this way, it's almost like the blind leading the blind. I think they try to be super hip downplay the religion. That it's, there's no, if I can put this way, there's no accountability. So, you know, I go there and it's almost, when I see people singing and praising, there's something beautiful about that, but there's also almost a perversion behind it. You know, it's almost like they're at a hippie concert and you know what I mean? Like Woodstock.
Right.
The way it is like this. And I'm like, is it worshiping Jesus, or is it, I don't know. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, each person has their story. I don't know what each person's story at something like that is, but you know, the fruit, the proof is in the pudding, right? I just think that we're known by our actions, and you know, I need to be called out myself by myself all the time, you know. You know, but you know, if the church will only become credible as much as it serves the people who suffer the most.
So to kind of shift a little bit as far as pilgrimages that you've been on.
Sure.
Where have you been?
Well, the pilgrimage that I went on was a formal Jesuit test. You're supposed to go out for a month with a one-way bus ticket and $35.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I left
for everybody.
Every guy in my house, so there was 10 of us. So every novice in the Jesuits does something like this. So so I went from St. Paul, Minnesota, took the Greyhound, which is an awful experience. But I mean, it's what it is, you know, it's where. But I went to Taos, New Mexico, and that's where I met Mary Sunshine. So that was like a formal, you know, ask people for money, kind of like really put yourself out there. And the whole idea is to trust God in like a more real way than you ever have, you know, where it's not just, oh, I trust God, but like, no, let's put it into money and getting a ride and where are you going to sleep tonight? So, so that was the most, formal pilgrimage. And from there, I went to this monastery for 2 weeks called Christ in the Desert, which is these monks, and monks pray 5 hours, five times a day, like 4 a.m. and 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. And so I did all those prayers and all that. And then I went and hitchhiked and got rides to, you know, to these various places. So it was great. People were very good to me.
You almost lived like the ancient disciples.
Yeah. I mean, relying on other people for help.
Yep. Well, which is, relying on God. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Relying on God, working through those three angels. Like, who was it? The one that was kicked out of the, was it Esau? Then the angel? No, who was the Ishmael? The angel helped him when he left Sarah, when she kicked him out. Jacob. Mm.
Yes. You're talking about as far as with Abraham?
Abraham,
yeah, so it was Ishmael, and God said that they were going to bless him and to listen to his wife and tend to,
Sarah. So, but that's, but anyway, no, it was, and, you know, and you're out there hitchhiking and just trying to pray, and someone comes and you just trust that that's the person you needed to be with. And
yeah. It's so funny. I had a wonderful conversation with my uncle. He's a deacon of, is it a deacon if you're in Catholic?
Yeah, Catholic.
Okay. So yeah, he's a deacon of a Catholic church, and he, you know, he's there as much as he can be. But he was telling me about what's his name? Oh my God, the book of the most wise man ever. I can't believe I forgot his name. David's son.
Oh, Solomon.
Solomon. So he's telling me on the book of Solomon, but he was saying how, because Solomon asked God for all the, you know, for wisdom. Not for anything else, that God just told him, hey, you know, don't basically ask for the greatest army or the riches, because if he had whatever, if he had the greatest army or women, because he told him, stay away from the foreign women, they're going to keep your heart away from me in layman terms. And tell them, don't have an army, a great army, because then you won't depend on me to win your battles and wars. So basically what I'm trying to say for you, did you feel like it increased your, I think it would for every person, especially in America, that you stripped yourself away from all the materialistic things, and all it was you and God and prayer life. By increasing your prayer life, even though you had less, did you feel like you had more spiritually, like you filled your soul?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a great question, because, I mean, as I think about that, the proof isn't the best word talking about God, but the benefit of the doubt was that someone shows up in your life who is so extraordinary. This woman who took people in, like, just like, you know, washing your hands, like just, and who is a angel in a way, you know? So, and the conversations I had, I mean, I went once, oh, here's one. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, it did help my trust in God. I was walking to this place called Chimayo Santuario, which is this beautiful, one of those old New Mexico churches with all the kind of Jesus crucifix.
Oh, yeah.
Time, yeah. And, you know, just the wooden and the statuary. And, you know, you go into this place and you feel the power, you feel the energy, you feel something holy. Well, I was walking there and it's a big pilgrimage site. And the reason it's a pilgrimage site is because it's this old 1500s church, but also they have dirt in the back of the church in the sacristy that people put on, they rub it on themselves if they have like a broken leg or paralyzed or something. And you see in the church, all these like crutches on the walls and walker, you know, and things that people have been physically healed.
Wow.
And so I was walking there, but it was getting towards night. And I was nervous because I heard there's a lot of violence in this area of near Mexico. Mexico, this is like 17 years ago, it was a pretty rough place. It was like very rich and very poor. Mm. But there had been a pilgrim who had been killed, and where am I going to stay tonight? And I'm walking to this church. I don't know what I'm going to do. Should I walk back to the town that I came from? And I'm praying about this, and I'm like, I remembered something, a quote that we learned in the Jesuits called agit quod age, which means in Latin, do what you are doing and trust God. Just do what you're doing. Don't get off course. Don't reshape your plans. Just do what you're doing and trust God. So I just said that. I kept walking, and I, about 45 seconds later, I got a ride from this guy. Lovely guy, took me to the church. We prayed there for a while. He said eventually, look, I told him my story. At the end of our time in the church, he said, look, I'll take you home. My wife and I can take care of you. So I got a hot shower, hot food. It was just like, okay, this is what it's all about.
Wow.
Faith. Yeah, faith. Yeah.
That was definitely beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, there it is.
Have you ever witnessed any miracles like that as far as the healing, the
that was my next question.
No. I've heard miracles, guys being healed in their own life in a psychological or relationship way. And these, you know, transformation of my moral whatever, but not like that.
Not physically. Yeah. Because there's you know, I there's the, like, the street evangelists, what do you call them?
The street healers?
Yeah, like Todd White, people like that. But then you don't know, because you don't know if it's
real,
or you don't know if it's what spirit's actually doing it. If it's the devil, because the devil, it comes steal, kill, destroy, and he's the biggest trickster ever. So
right.
You know, I always see these things happening. I'm like, Jesus didn't live wealthy, but he healed and whatever, and went from city to city. So when I see these street healers and stuff, and then I look and I'm like, oh, they start off the street, right, and now they're in a mansion, and now they have their own ministry. And then I'm like, where's God? There's no God in this. You have your platform, you have your soapbox.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like I said, you don't know what to believe. I mean, I pray for discernment.
Right.
You know,
that's a great, you know, that word is something that the Jesuits have been, that's kind of our bailiwick. Is that the right word? I don't even know what bailiwick means.
Bro, you sound good.
You got me.
Use it again.
I'm really smart.
It's, I'm gonna use kind that of word our, later.
Our thing. Like, okay. You know, it's our outside, you know, it's our three-pointer for Steph Curry of the Jets. we're the three pointer for us is discernment. Like, so just sifting through, where is the evil one, the enemy? Where is the good spirit? You know, the low spirit or the spirit of light, testing the spirits and seeing what does it bear? What are the fruit? You know, what are the fruits? I mean, if it brings chaos, deceit, you know, tension and stress and then it's not a good spirit.
Yeah. What is your family's background? Do you have family in a church as well?
Yeah. I grew up very devout, traditional Catholic, seven kids, big Catholic family, Midwest, Omaha, altar server, Catholic sports leagues, Catholic high school, college, you know, just
wow.
The Catholic culture, if you know it very well, can be an all enveloping world that you grow up in, from the church to leagues to high school to, you know, it's a whole culture. So I grew up Catholic.
Did you ever sway from it or steer from it since it was your whole entire upbringing? Were you ever the prodigal son? In other words,
I wish I had a good story like that, but I do not. I never did leave. I kind of bought it the whole way through. It never didn't make sense to me. Life, resurrection, and death of Jesus Christ, life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, you know, the Eucharist, Catholic culture. It's just, you know, I never backed away from it.
What are your thoughts on, this might be a little touchy, but all the scandals with the kids?
Yeah, it's totally disheartening. And, here's the deal. When someone, let's say you're an adult working with a kid and you cross a boundary, a horrible boundary, and it's life changing and damaging and catastrophic. You're also a religious figure, but then change that to a religious figure who's an adult who transgresses with a kid. It's even worse in a way, because you're on a different kind of pedestal. And so it would mess up this kid's relationship with how they even understand God. This person of God was the one who did something so vile to me that I've had my entire view of church, religion, God, spirituality crushed, you know?
Yeah.
That's, you know, any abuse by anyone is horrific. And it's, you know, the kids, child sexual abuse is an epidemic in the country, whoever. Yeah, I mean, it just is. I mean, we're a hypersexualized culture for kids, and they are vulnerable in homes they live in. The Boy Scouts just had a big revelation of all these cases. It's a cultural epidemic, and we're part of it. But the thing is, you know, and I said to a woman once who's Catholic, kind of trying to like defend, well, you know, all the, you know, it's in every part of society, and you know, youth coaches and your uncle at home is you know, these different places. And she's like, but you're setting yourself up as a higher standard.
Yeah.
That's why it's worse. Mm. And she's right. You know, we could say, yes, the numbers, and it's an epidemic, and that's totally true. The Boy Scouts. But when you claim to be a religious authority who's doing something so vile, it damages so much more, you know?
Yeah, because they're God's on trial, you know? That's what it is. You're a representation of that figure that people are supposed to have faith in. So it definitely, I mean, like you said, it's bigger. It's a bigger consequence when it's a religious figure than it is regular person.
And we're just starting to, I mean, the church has by its own actions put itself through the ringer, and thank God for journalists like the Boston Globe, you know, who did a great service to everyone, let alone the church, for exposing these terrible things. But other, you know, unfortunately, other non-denoms, other orders, other Protestant, you know, everyone, it's coming out more and more. And it's, so it's a reckoning a lot of groups in the religious world are going to face more and more as we bring these things to light.
As someone that is so has a culture or a tradition of the church and reading, I'm pretty sure you read the Bible, the gospel regularly. Do you feel, I'd feel this, so I'm asking you, do you feel like we are, in fact, in the last days, that we are probably minutes away from the end, judgment day?
The rapture?
Well, yeah, the rapture. Yeah, the rapture, but the rapture is not the end. That's when Jesus is supposed to meet up with people in the air. He's supposed to grab his people, and the rest is supposed to go through the trials and tribulations for how many years? Seven years, I believe. 5 years. Is it 7 years?
I don't know.
Because they'll get an opportunity. They'll be tortured, but they'll get an opportunity, I believe, to get saved. But it'll be hell on earth. Yeah.
You know, that's interesting. Maybe you can help me understand this better.
Yeah.
Why do you think now is, or why would you ask that question? Do you think that might be, that these days are indicating that?
Absolutely. Reason I believe that.
Tell me more.
I believe that ever since I was, I think in high school. So I had a buddy that was super religious. He was in the Baptist church. So he was one guy in high school, which you probably were, that carried around his Bible and was giving the gospel to everyone. And that's what he did. And there's something, even what my uncle would tell me, there's something in Revelation that would scare the living daylight out of my soul. I was like, whoa, how can this be in the Bible? And from that age, hearing about the Revelation and reading it, and growing up and just seeing how from slowly but surely everything from good, what is good what's good will be considered bad, and what's bad will be considered good. From church being, from the gospel, from Jesus being kind of being removed from the culture, if you would, and us, and, you know, Christians being, like he said, being attacked in a sense where you have, you know, the fluid genders and stuff like that, almost attacking the church in a sense. Like you have, you know, the sexual orientation being more so prevalent in school than Jesus. So I've seen certain things that have happened that make me question, yeah, this is a scary time we're living in. I have daughters, and I've seen, like you said, hyposexual society. So now, We did a thing on Social Dilemma. We did a movie review on that. And that was scary as far as what technology has done. And it seems to be the new, devil?
I would just say new addiction.
The new addiction, but it's beyond that. I mean, it's making us a narcissist world. So, I mean, but what I would say, what I've seen, yeah, everything from almost civil wars in America happening with the race and everything, and shootings and you know, things you would think, if you have a soul, you would say, well, that's wrong. You know, if you shoot someone that's unarmed, it's wrong. And putting a price on, or a fraternity. So you say, oh, you know, if people say Black Lives Matter, and then people say, well, Blue Lives Matter. And my thing is, Blue Lives is a uniform. A Black life is a color, a person. Yeah. So it's like when you take off your uniform at night, you're human. You're just a regular, lack of better phrase, Joe. You're a regular Joe. Exactly. And
exactly.
My complexion doesn't come off. His complexion doesn't come off. We are who we are. all day long, and the content of our character is never the first thing people see or give a chance to. So I know it was a long-winded answer, but yeah, it was a really good question you asked me back.
Well, he's trying to remind him, trying to figure out what were you saying.
Yeah, what the heck is going on? I mean, that's, you know, that's such a great question, because it gets into, you know, I think, let me put it like this. That's a theology that I don't really engage with. And God, if people do that helps to animate their lives or get them on the right track or make them understand something about understanding that we're in the end times, or if that's a way that is helpful for someone to get closer to God and not in a fear-driven way, like I got to do the right things, but then, you know, it's just not where my mind goes, to be completely honest. Okay. I don't know. Mm-hmm. B, you know, there's been a lot of really bad times in this world, you know. Yeah. I mean, World War I was horrific. I mean, you know, just these boys sent into mustard gas in a way that, I mean, I think of that war in particular because it really didn't need to happen. It was this horrific slow march to doom, which no one wanted to stop. And it, you know, so we always think that this is the worst time. These were pretty terrible times, you know? I mean, we probably have a little bit of different views on sexuality and stuff. And I don't know, you mentioned something. I mean, I work in a world right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I come from a very straight-laced conservative Catholic world, and you know, I didn't know any gay people, or, you know, I didn't know people were out or whatever. I just, you know, lived in this very, you know, 1970s, 1980s, you know, kind of bro world. But I just got to be with people where they're at, you know, people who are gay, people who are cross-gender or gender, like it's a gender fluid.
Yeah.
A lot of folks that I work with is in this mutual aid society, for instance, I mean, there's some who would be maybe gender fluid, like you said. And I just got to be with people where they're at. And no judgment on your views, or I don't even know what your views are, but I just have to kind of meet the person and look them in the eye as a person.
Yeah.
And like with anything, I mean, the whole, you know, when I studied theology as a novice, they said the scriptures are a faith story told by people of faith to people of faith to make a faith statement, so that there's no camera recording what happened. There's no journalists writing down Jesus' every word. That the way those ancient Near Eastern cultures told in first century ancient Near Eastern cultures was to help us understand something about getting closer to God. And that the entire salvation history from, you know, Adam on down is all about us getting close to God, leaving God, getting close to God, leaving God. The Israelis being close to God crossing the Red Sea, getting lost in the desert, and then abandoning God for the golden calf, going back to God, abandoning God. So that, it seems to me anyway, from what I remember, it's all about that. How do we get closer to God? How do we understand God's will? How do we discern, like we said, like you said, and understand what God wants us to do? So end times, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. But all I can do is, I guess, take care of my side of the street, what I can do, you know?
Yes.
If this is the end, if the end is in 15 more minutes, and I end with a great conversation with you guys, I'm happy, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I appreciate that.
People were saying when Obama was president, it was end times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right. You're right. A black man president? What?
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
That's cool. And to speak on my beliefs, I'm a person that I just love people and I respect people. So it's not for me to judge. And I know everyone has... Because for me to judge is for me to ask people not to judge me. You know, hey, I'm going to judge you, but I'm expecting you not to judge me, not to have a a predetermined thought about me or what or who I am. Or if I have a hoodie on, that I can't just be wearing that for style.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I go to, let me put it like this. I have been in spiritual faith sharing groups. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, I grew up in Nebraska. I didn't know any Black people. I don't know any gay people. I don't know anybody except white Catholics, really. Like, and so I go to a faith sharing group, and there's a lot of gay and lesbian people, and, or people who just, or even whatever, like punk rock types or whatever. Yeah. People with a very, let me just put it like this, a very different world that I come from, or a very different way of being that I come from. Mm-hmm. And I'm a, kind of a button down, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And what strikes me is that people are just trying to live their lives, and people are suffering and trying to become themselves. And it always just helps me to look through whatever's on the outside. See, this is just a person who's trying, who's doing their best to make it, you know? And this is in New York, where people are just trying to, you know, by their fingernails, just trying to make it. So anyway.
In your viewpoint, what hope does God offer today to those who are impacted by the virus?
Yeah.
I know that's kind of a tough one.
No, it's funny. There's a priest in my house here who I live with 10 priests.
Oh, wow.
there's 10 of us here. I'm a brother in the Jesuits, and there's 9 priests. Actually, one guy is studying to be a priest. So there's 8 priests, a brother, and then a guy studying to be a priest. But he said that he's had more weddings lately. He says people looking to get married than he's usually had. And this is the Hispanic community. So it's just not been a tradition of Hispanic Catholics getting, you know, a lot of weddings there.
Yeah.
And so he wonders if there's something where people are like, all right, we're going to do this or not, you know. Things are coming to a head. The world is in chaos. Life is short. You know, maybe they're looking at. So my job is to say you know, what is that? You know, nothing is impossible for God. Or God can give us more than we can ask for or imagine. So that even in, you know, if you go to the depths of Sheol, I will be there, right? That's one of the Psalms. Mm-hmm. And so that even the worst times, God is doing something.
Okay.
So it's, for me anyway, it's just a matter of where is God doing something good in this? People are getting reconnected with family members and old friends during this, right? You probably heard. And people are praying and meditating more. Some people have been doing, you know, getting some new craft or hobby, or, you know, some practice, creative work is happening.
Yep.
More so. So for people who don't believe or have a tepid relationship, maybe it's calling out. What do we believe or not believe? Is this is real? The world is not, you know, Jerry Seinfeld had this thing, and I don't know anything about Jerry Seinfeld's religion or whatever, but he was on like Colbert or Jimmy Kimmel or someone where he was asking like, well, what do you think about this pandemic? And he said, I realized that I am nothing. the world, I have no control.
Yep.
It's the universe telling me that you are so insignificant.
Yep.
It helps me to realize there's a lot that I'm powerless over.
Yeah.
And God is the higher power. And that's all I can take is my take care of my side of the street and let God do the rest.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I was going to say, when you mentioned the Hispanic community more so getting married, I think, do you believe that has to tie in with them feeling like the end time? That's why they're trying to not only get right with their household, but get right with God, because you can't live in wedlock and expect to go to heaven because you're living in sin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what people are thinking. Mm-hmm. I this is just a few people.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there's this John Paul, the Pope, who actually just had got some bad press lately, but anyway, that's a long story. We can talk about that later. But he said that, I believe there is a hell, but I don't know if anyone's there, you know?
Yeah.
That, you know, that's the classic question. Would God actually allow people to go to hell? Maybe, maybe not. That's like one of those classic theological debates.
Yeah.
So are people thinking that? Maybe, maybe. Yeah. But are they just saying in a really concrete way, okay, I want to really commit to you, you know? Mm. I don't want it to be just halfway. I don't want to just live together,
yeah,
or kind of be pals, lovers, partners, girlfriend. I want to make this real and have God be part of it. Now, I have no idea what people are thinking, but it's just speculation.
No, I got it. It just seems like when you mentioned people picked up hobbies, people started praying more. And I think it goes back to missionaries or your pilgrimage that and the disciples, because I think everything works through God. So I think, or they can say the universe, which I believe the universe is a system the Most High made.
Right.
That
I do too.
God give it, God take it away. So I think God literally had to strip us of everything that we thought was significant and make us feel like Seinfeld said, that to realize he's nothing, that he has no control, that.
Right, right.
Even all this money, even if he's a multimillionaire, he still has to stay at home, still has to stay quarantined.
Exactly. And money won't
make a difference.
We're none, no one is beyond that, you know?
Yeah.
There's this great, I happen to have this right here because I read this a lot in the mornings.
What's that?
Pope Francis, it's just a binder that I made. You know, this is exactly what you're saying. So Pope Francis did this prayer service in the Vatican, like in March or April, early April. And he said, this is like a storm. And it uncovers those false and superfluous certainties around which we have constructed our lives, that we have allowed to become dull and feeble the very things that nourish, sustain, and strengthen our lives and our communities. I just love this. The tempest lays bare all our prepackaged ideals and forgetfulness of what nourishes people's souls, attempts that anesthetize us with ways of thinking and acting that supposedly save us, but instead prove incapable of putting us in touch with our roots. We deprive ourselves of the antibodies we need to confront adversity. This is not a time of God judging us, but of our judgment, a time to choose God.
Wow.
So I couldn't say it better than that.
Yeah, that's well said.
Yeah.
Very profound. Yeah.
So to wrap this up.
Yeah.
What do you want the viewers to know about your book and as far as what we've been talking about?
As far as the book?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the book is about stories. So I think life is just takes place in stories. It's, you know, we can talk theology and scripture and ideas and all we want, and all that is great and we should, but in the end it's people just living life. So it's kind of a literary take on through various stories about all of these questions. So anyone who is wherever they're coming from on the religious, theological, atheist, any kind of level, hopefully would just be interested in stories that ultimately engage the deepest questions that we ask. And I think everyone ask those questions, whatever side of the fence they land on, in any side of philosophy or spirituality or religion. So that's, you know, that's what I would tell someone who's asking about reading it. Well, here's some people's life experience and how they've grappled with God, or how I've tried to understand how God is at work. So I think stories are the best way to do that.
What would you tell yourself that you got from writing this book? Because I know you were seeking out an answer. What answer was revealed to you?
I mean, without giving away the ending.
Your revelation, your epiphany that you got from
right, that. Right. I mean.
I think he's still searching.
No, I think he's got it.
I mean, you know, I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's being okay not knowing a final clear answer. Because if I knew why we suffered, if I knew the mind of God, I would be God. I'm making myself absolutely a deity. If I pretend to have glib, clear answers, like in some little tract, this is exactly what God is. It's like, no, I'm making myself a golden calf. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, all I can control is my response. So suffering happens. What can I do about it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't answer or fix the world, but it's more like, you know, World Trade Center happens. Do you either go to the place or do you run from it? You know, you know, do you check in on your neighbors or do you just ball up into this, you know, in a closet for, you know,
right. In a fetal position.
Yeah. What do we do about it? That's, you know, the answer to suffering is our response. You know, it's how we live our lives.
Gotcha. And to touch on what you just said, I mean, being a parent, I've come to understand God more when I realize sometimes my children need to suffer and learn in order to appreciate their parents. So, and brings us closer, even punishing them.
You just like torture.
Even punishing them brings them back and makes the bond stronger because they understand. Being a parent, I can't answer your question as far as, you know, your title, death. What is it?
Death, where is thy sting?
Oh, death, what sting? But I do know, if we were not loved, we would not be punished, because I've disciplined my daughters because I love them.
Right.
Because I don't want them to go out in the world and be lost.
Yeah. As a teacher, I've taught kids for years. And if kids don't face consequences, that's like child abuse. You know, because then they live in a world where they've never had boundaries, and they're like, it's like the worst thing you can do to a kid is not give them consequences and boundaries. So
absolutely.
That's
the world we're living in right now.
Yeah. So, I hear you. So, I mean, the book comes out mid-December, Orbis Books, and, you know, you can pre-order it, and it's on all the, you know, the usual platforms. I mean, I think for me as a writer, you know, whatever people think of the content, agree, disagree, like it, not, what I've done as a writer is make it readable, that it's not high theology, it's not intricate philosophy, it's not, it's hopefully, I think it's readable stories that just can grab people and keep it moving. So I'm glad about that as a writer.
Gotcha. Is there a website or anything people can reach out to, or Facebook or anything you want to give
out? They can, for the book, they can go to orbisbooks.com.
Okay.
Or they can actually, I have a website, joehoover.net.
Okay. We'll make sure to put that on the screen.
Reach me out there. I'm on Facebook. So
Awesome.
Joe, it's been a pleasure.
Hey, this has been...
I love it.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. This has been wonderful. One of the promises I made to God, the Most High, when I started this was, or anything I do, acting and anything, I always give him praise. And the fact that you said that you were writing this book, I felt that was my way to give back to God. And I always said I would never deny him.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
I love it. Thank you, guys. Thanks so much. It has been a real pleasure.
As well.
Yep.
God bless.
Okay, take care.
Have a good evening. You too.
See ya. Bye.
Take care. Bye.